It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18+. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. I'm here with U.S. Women's Champion Nazih Pakidze, coming off of the Olympiad. She is an international master. Most of you listeners probably have heard of her. Great. Young chess player in the United States. Thanks for coming on, Nazih. The way I usually like to start with my guests is beginning with your childhood and how you got into chess. So I know that you started playing chess in Georgia, in the former Soviet Union. Why don't you take it from here and tell us about your initial introduction to playing chess?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. Yes, I started playing chess in Georgia when I was 5 years old. My dad taught me how to play. I think it's a tradition in Georgia that every family has a chess set at home, and the parents teach the kids, and if kids are interested, then they continue on playing chess, maybe even professionally. And I was one of those kids who just loved the game, and I would not stop playing. All my free time, I was begging my dad to play more chess. And he loved playing me, but actually after I beat him when I was 5.5 years old, he didn't like to play me anymore. So he would take me to a nearby park. And just like I think in New York City, there's a park where they play chess, right?
Yes.
There are many similar parks in Georgia, and that's where I used to play and beat many older people, and I fell in love with the game. And then actually when I went to school in my first grade, chess was part of the curriculum. They used to teach chess at schools, and they teach it today too as well. And my teacher, I guess, saw some talent in me and told my parents to maybe take it more seriously, find a professional chess coach. And that's what my parents did. And from there, I started competing in national events and traveling around the world and so on.
Okay, I have a few questions off of mm-hmm. that. One, just out of curiosity, when they play chess in the park in Georgia, is it for money, as they often do here in the mm-hmm. U.S., or is it a more pure love of the game thing?
As I remember, it was just for the game, but maybe they were playing for money with each other, more older men.
Right.
They didn't play me, a six-year-old, for money.
Okay. Well, that's reassuring. And was your dad a serious chess player?
No. He also learned, I think, at school. And I think his level would be maybe 800 right now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the curriculum, as you know, I'm a chess teacher, so part of the goal of this podcast is to help promote chess, get more people exposed to it, think more about ways to reach more people. So I'm just curious, in a chess powerhouse like Georgia, if I know that you were young, but do you remember or do you have any knowledge of how the curriculum was structured? Was it like in your classroom or after school?
I do remember it. It was not required for everyone, but so there are different lessons besides chess, some that are not usual subject to most of the schools, and we had a choice to choose one of these classes.
So an elective.
Yes, it was an elective, but it was every day.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, it was every day. It wasn't after school. It was just during, I don't remember exactly, of course, but it was a full 45-minute lesson.
Wow, that's great to have that every day. That would be great for kids here. Don't think it's happening anytime soon, but you never know.
Yeah.
So when they identified you as a talented player, I know that historically in the former Soviet Union, there was the Palace of Pioneers where kids would have state-sponsored study. I know that you grew up later than that, so I'm just curious if there was any government sponsorship or if your parents paid for all of your chess improvement and instruction.
Yeah, I think that government sponsorship ended before I was born. So my parents were paying for my teachers and for my competitions, yes.
Okay, and you're Russian by heritage, correct?
Not true. No, my dad is Georgian.
Okay.
And my mom is, my mom's dad was Georgian and her mom is Ukrainian.
Okay. And do you have a sense for how it is or why it is that Georgian women in particular have had such incredible success on the international chess scene?
You mean today or?
Well, more historically.
Historically. Mm-hmm. I don't know historically why it was, why Georgian women especially were so successful, but I know why today so many Georgian women play chess. It's because of our historical women who have won world championships so many times. Nona Gaprindashvili and Maya Chiburdanidze, especially.
And did you, you heard about them a lot growing up, I gather?
Oh, absolutely. I even had a chance to, they used to come to schools and play simul with kids. And that was very encouraging. I remember I was 6 or 7 years old when I played Nona Gaprindashvili first.
Wow.
And she was very nice after I played the opening very well. She just offered me a draw, and that was amazing for me. That I made a draw with women's world champion.
Yeah, I'm sure that lit a fire under you.
Yes.
So moving forward to you're continuing to play as a kid, and were you one of the top players in Georgia for your age group through the time you lived there?
Yes. So every Georgian championship I played, I finished first or second every year.
Wow. That's very good. And then I understand you eventually moved to Russia. Is that correct?
Yes. When I was 12 years old, I moved to Moscow. My family moved to Moscow, and it was great for my chess as well because I consider Moscow as the capital of chess in the world. So many great tournaments and great coaches and so many great players to work with, and that helped me a lot. My rating actually went from, I think, about 2200 to 2450 in 1 year.
Wow.
After I moved to Moscow, yes.
And was your move for chess-related reasons, was it for your parents?
No, it was actually for my brother. He was a professional soccer player, and he was playing for Moscow's national team.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Does he still play?
No, he got seriously injured when he was 18. And he couldn't play anymore. So now he is a soccer coach.
Okay, that's impressive to have a professional chess player and a professional soccer player in the same family. What are your parents' backgrounds?
My mom has a master's in biochemistry. And my dad, I think, auto engineer. Yeah.
Wow. And they're athletes as well?
No, actually, they're very far. They're both very far from soccer and chess. I mean, my dad liked the game and knew how to play. My mom still doesn't know how to play chess, actually. But they did everything for us.
That's great. So they continued to get you coaches as you got older. And when did you start to travel for chess?
Mm-hmm. My first international tournament was European Youth Championship in 2003. Okay. Actually, Magnus Carlsen was playing there too, under age 14 or 12, I think. Yeah, and
how old were you then?
I was 9 years old.
Okay.
I was playing under 10, and some girls already had ratings. I did not have rating at the time, and I started phenomenally. I went 7 out of 7 and actually won the tournament 2 rounds before it ended.
Wow. So you didn't have a FIDE rating? Is that what you mean? Or any rating at all?
Yeah, I think I didn't have a FIDE rating yet.
Okay.
I got it after the tournament.
Okay. But there was some sort of system to sort you and identify you as the one to represent Georgia? Or was it just
To qualify to play at the European or World Youth Championship, you had to finish second or first in Georgian Championship.
Okay. Was there a Georgian rating system?
I think so. It's difficult to remember.
Yeah, I know it was a long time ago. I don't remember very much from when I was 7 or 8. So moving forward, what brought you to the United States?
So at 16... I won European Youth Championship under 16, and the first prize was a scholarship at Texas University in Dallas. You probably heard of the program, UTD.
Yes, yes.
And that was the first time I considered coming to the U.S. because at the time I was a professional full-time chess player, and I thought I lived in the perfect place in Moscow. But I started considering it to try something else, go to college. And after I graduated from high school, I took 1 year off and I played chess professionally and traveled a lot. And I realized that I want to try something else besides chess. So that's when I decided to apply for a college in the U.S. And actually, I didn't end up going to UTD because I learned that there are many chess schools in the U.S. that offer chess scholarship. So I applied to different universities and then chose Baltimore. I just wanted to be closer to the East Coast, to New York, and that's why I chose UMBC.
Okay, I have a couple questions based on that. So at 16, you considered yourself a professional chess player already?
Yes.
But you also mentioned you graduated from high school. So were you studying at home, or how were you structuring your time?
Yeah, I was homeschooled after middle school.
Oh, wow.
And I was just going to school once a month or once in 2 months to pass the exams.
Okay. And how much chess were you studying those days?
Most of my days I was spending on chess, I would say 6 to 8 hours.
Okay, and how structured was the time? How did you know what to study?
Well, I had wonderful coaches always. In Moscow, my coach was Vladimir Belov. He was actually Russian women's Olympics team coach for a couple of years, so he was really great. And I would have chess sessions with him for 4 or 5 hours a day, and then I would have homework to work on by myself.
Wow, that's intense. Did you enjoy your life as a 16-year-old?
Yes, I was extremely busy. It seemed like I never had any free time, but I loved what I was doing, so I didn't feel like I was missing out on anything else.
Nice. Okay, so getting to UMBC, how many years did you spend there?
I studied at UMBC for 3 years, and then I decided I was not studying what I would love to do all my life. My major was information systems, and decided to take a break. And actually, that's when I switched and my federation and started representing U.S. and played my first U.S. Championship in 2015.
Okay.
And I finished second. And after that semester, yeah, I dropped out of college and came back to chess again.
Okay. I had a question for you relating. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. How does switching federations, like, what are the mechanisms of that? Was this your own decision, or did someone approach you about it?
It was a very long process, actually. So I was considering it, but I wasn't sure if I was going to stay in the United States and live here. So I wasn't seriously considering it until they approached me from the UHS Federation and asked me if I would be interested to play for the U.S. And I liked the option I had in front of me. So I said yes, and I thought that would be easy to just transfer, but it took me 2 years to actually make the transfer because Georgian Chess Federation wouldn't let me go easily.
Right.
And the FIDE has some very specific rules how if you have played for your national team at the Olympiad or European or World Team Championships, then your country has the right to not let you switch the federation for 2 years and something like that. And I was, of course, not aware of any of that.
Right. Yeah, sounds like a lot of red tape.
Yes, and actually at some point I had given up hope that it would happen because it was taking so much time, and there's also some money involved. You have to pay FIDE and you have to pay your country, your federation, and so on. And I had given up, and then I received an email one day, I think it was August 2014 or September, that my transfer has been completed.
Oh,
it was
wow.
Completely unexpected. And then 2 months later, I received an invitation to my first U.S. Women's Championship. So it was really a great surprise.
And was the 2 years up, or was that rule?
Yes. So apparently 2 years was up, and some other things I actually don't even remember anymore. I really had given up because there were so many things to it.
Yeah, that does not sound fun. I don't know what your personality is like, but I think a lot of chess players struggle with day-to-day, daily tasks like paying bills and stuff like that. And this sounds like that times 50.
I'm actually quite the opposite. I'm extremely organized, and I have to have everything done perfectly. And that's why I had given up on that, because it was taking so much time, and it seems like there was nothing I could do to have an impact on it.
Right. Well, so, I'm glad that it worked out. And when you thought about this, did you feel like it was a commitment to live in the U.S. for a long time, or just, this is best for my career and I'll figure it out later?
Yes, so I was not required to live in the U.S. Like, Anna Zatonsky does not live in the U.S. She lives in Germany, but plays for the U.S. and has been for many, many years. So I like that I didn't have to commit to living in the U.S. forever, but I thought that was a really good career move for me. Since I was not planning on going back to Georgia, my family lives in Russia, and I just didn't see myself ever playing for Georgia national team anymore. So it seemed like the right choice.
What about the Russian national team?
Yeah, actually, I had an offer in 2010 or 11 to switch federation and play for Russian federation, and I was very seriously considering it. The Russian women have won Olympiad, I think, twice, and they're not only one of the best female players in the world. So I very much wanted to join them. But that was the time when I was considering to move to U.S. for college. And my offer to switch federations had some conditions, that I would have to stay in Russia and play in the tournaments they would want me to play, and they would have assigned me a coach, and I would have to physically be there most of the time in Moscow. So that's why I wasn't sure that I wanted to commit to it at 16.
Yeah, that makes sense. Was there any sort of stipend involved, or was it just that they pay for your continued education in chess?
They were mostly talking to my parents, actually, because I was 16. But as I remember, I would have very strong coaches for free, and all my tournaments would have been sponsored. I don't think there was a stipend involved.
Okay. And getting back to UMBC, so after 3 years, you decided to drop out. And was that in order to prepare for the U.S. Women's Championship?
And I dropped out after the U.S. Championship, but U.S. Championship happened in April, right before my finals and everything, so it was impossible to manage both college and preparation for the U.S. Championship. And I was already considering to drop out, of course, months before that. It was not an impulse decision. So it just worked out that I saw that I can still... So when I went to college for the 3 years, I took a break from chess. I was playing some tournaments, but I was not studying at all. And, of course, chess is a skill that you need to train every single day to get better. And if you don't, you just get worse. Right. So when I was very unprepared for my first U.S. championship, and I finished second. I didn't lose a single game. It was the push I needed to drop out of school, realize that I can still do this. I can come back and still be a professional.
Now, when you have periods where you're not playing as much chess, is it like an emotional swing for you, or just more of a practical decision? I'm just curious, because I know that I feel like some chess players, and I have a poker background, and this is true in poker as well, have like a love-hate relationship with the game, where where they're consumed by it for a while and then they're repelled by it for a while. So I'm just curious if that was the case for you, or if it was more just a practical decision.
I definitely have had that relationship with chess, where I would love it, and then after a horrible tournament, I would just hate it and would want to quit forever many times. But eventually, I would still come back because I love the game. I think when I was younger, that was definitely the case. After bad tournaments, I would take a break just to forget about it. But now I don't play often because I actually still can get used to this tournament format in the U.S. where you have to play two serious games a day.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, I was used to playing one game a day in Europe, with even one free day during the tournament in between. It was wonderful, and I'm still getting used to that here. So I try to play tournaments where at least some of the games are one game a day, and there are not many tournaments like that in the U.S.
Does that make you inclined to travel more to play, or to think about living in Europe, or just to play
less? No, I just think that before, I believe that playing a lot was very important, and I think at the time it was. But right now, I think studying more and working on chess is more important, and playing few tournaments a year, big ones like the important ones, rather than traveling every weekend or every week and playing random tournaments. I mean, it depends from chess player to chess player. For me personally, working on chess, I think I learn much more from than playing a tournament.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move forward to your actual second U.S. championship. So you were done with school. You did well in your first U.S. championship. How were you spending your time leading up to the second U.S. championship? Were you still living in Baltimore? Or did you move once you dropped out of school?
My husband and I moved to Frederick, which is close to Baltimore. That's where my husband worked. So since I didn't have to stay in Baltimore anymore, it was the right decision to move to Frederick. And I changed my lifestyle completely after college. I had much less stress and much more free time. So I just transformed my life completely, started living very healthy, eating very healthy, working out every day, studying chess, and also studying on my own, because eventually my husband and I both want to start our own business, and that's what we're working on any second that we have free.
Are you ready to reveal any of the details of this business?
And no, not yet.
Okay, you'll have to keep us posted. So tell us about the experience. I watched your chess.com videos covering the U.S. Championship, so I know a little bit about the experience, but why don't you just tell us about the round-by-round drama and how it felt to have such an amazing accomplishment.
I have to say that U.S. Championship was by far the best tournament of my life, and not only because I won it, but everything, including the emotions and the games, just everything together was really memorable. So, of course, my goal was to win the tournament, but I think no one else assumed that I could win the tournament. I think I was still considered as an underdog. And I think only people who believed I could do this was me and my husband. But I think I started well, but when I saw the pairings, I knew that I had to play Arena Crush in the last round with black pieces. That was unpleasant. I thought that I had to be like point ahead before the last round, point ahead everyone else. So in the last round, even if I lost, I could still win or finish second. But of course, you know, thinking ahead like that in the tournament never works. You have to go game by game, day by day. And I was just preparing a lot right before the round. I would wake up early and prepare for many hours. But unfortunately for me, I didn't guess many openings, and I didn't have any success in the openings, actually. But I think I played very well in the middle games and outplayed most of my opponents. And I have to give credit to Boris Gelfand's book. I think it's called Positional Thinking. That's one book I read before the tournament, and I think it changed my view of chess game. It really helped me a lot. After I read that book, I was inspired to play positionally. I'm more known to be a tactical player and dynamic player, and that book really changed my preference. And in every game, I was trying to get positional play, and it worked very well. But it seemed like I was not going to win because my friend Tatev Abrahamian was doing extremely well. She was, I think, half point ahead almost the whole tournament. And she also got lucky against Anna Zatonskaya when Anna just blundered a queen on move 10 or 12. And that doesn't happen very often. So to me, it seemed like after that game that everything was going in Tatev's way and this was her tournament. And I actually got very discouraged after that. Going to the last round, she was half a point ahead of me and she was playing a young girl, a weaker opponent, and I had to face Irina Krush with black pieces. And it just seemed like, okay, this was just not my tournament. Because to win a tournament, no matter how well you do, you still need the luck on your side. And it seemed to be on Tatev's side. And I was happy for her, but I was disappointed for myself. And then going into the last round, I really did not believe for a second that I had a chance to win the championship. Because everything had to go my way. I had to win with black pieces, and Tatev had to lose against a younger girl. I can't pronounce her name correctly, but Eswaran Astritha, I think. So I didn't even prepare for the game, to be honest, because Irina plays so many openings. It was just, at that point, I was it was more important to be psychologically prepared than chess-wise. I just wanted to get a game, and then I was ready to go all in because I had to win no matter what. I had second place guaranteed, so I could lose the game and still finish second. So it didn't matter if I lost, really. And she chose an opening that was very positional, knight f3, g3, and I was disappointed when I saw the opening. I was like, okay, this is very equal. It would be very hard to create any chances for me with black pieces. And then somehow I managed to open up position and complicate everything. And I was really into the game. At the moment, I completely forgot what was on stake, that I could win US Championship if I won the game. I was just so into the game. And, yeah, I was not even looking at Tatev's board. But apparently she got worse in the opening, and her opponent played a brilliant game and beat her. And when I saw the result, that affected me. But at that point, my position was already much better, close to winning. So all I had to do was just calm down and not think about the result and just finish my game. And I managed to do that. And after she resigned, I had this huge relief. I can't even explain how amazing it felt. And it took me a while to comprehend that I was new U.S. Women's Champion.
Understandably, it's an incredible accomplishment. I really enjoyed your video recapping the game with Irina. I recommend it to anyone who is a chess.com member. And as you just mentioned, my favorite part was your talking about the emotions, because I feel like, I mean, obviously the game was a really interesting dynamic game, but stuff like that is what other chess players could never experience. And I know Jan Gustafsson, previous guest, was saying that that's what he thinks people underrate in terms of evaluating players at the top levels, who has basically more consistent mental toughness. So is that something you're going to work on? I mean, obviously you came out well from this, so I'm not not saying that you need to work on it, but just out of curiosity, is that an emphasis in your training now?
Actually, funny story. So that experience where I needed to win the last round was not my first time. And I think being experienced in that situation is what helped me and what kept me calm during that US Championship. So a few years back, I was playing Russian Championship in 2010, I think. And I was young, and I was playing a really strong field, Olympic champions. And I had a fantastic tournament. I think by rating, I was number 10 out of 12 people, and I was winning. So in the last round, with white pieces, I need a win against last seed in the tournament, and I become Russian champion. And I was just so not ready for that psychologically and emotionally. I completely collapsed. I got checkmated in 25 moves with white pieces, which has never happened to me. And I learned a lot from that. That was so devastating. I did quit chess after that for 3 months. Because that was a most stressful event in my life. And I think I learned then that how important this mental toughness is in chess. Because that was the only explanation why I lost that game and didn't win the championship.
So did you adjust your training based on that? Did you read any books or hire a coach? Or was it just a matter of increased awareness?
It was mostly increased awareness, and I was always fascinated by psychology, so I learned a lot about how mind works and about sports psychology. I read many books, and they absolutely helped. And for this tournament, for the US Championship, when similar situation happened, I was already prepared for it. And I knew that in the last round, the mental toughness mattered more than anything else.
Yeah, and as we record this, this won't be released immediately, but the Carlsen match just concluded, and I read an interview where he, which is surprising because he's known for his mental toughness, but he felt like that was the weakness of his play. What was your overall impression of that match?
I was very excited to watch the whole match. Of course, there were some so-called boring games, but I still enjoyed every part of it. And I was fascinated by the tie breaks. First of all, in the classical games, Magnus lost first. When he lost the first time with white pieces, he was obviously devastated, and he still came back and won a game. That I didn't have a doubt that he would do. He's world champion, and he didn't get there by just being good at chess. He's good at coming back and bouncing back. But in the tie breaks, when he missed the win in the second game, where he's completely winning with white pieces, and Karjakin miraculously defends everything and draws, I thought after that Sergei had a huge advantage psychologically, and I really thought Carlsen could not come back from that. And that's when he showed the mental toughness in the next round, the third round with black pieces, that it seemed like he completely forgot what happened in the last round, and he just played like he normally would, without any emotions, and he beat Sergei with black.
Yeah, I wonder if the fast time control helped him, because he didn't really have time to regret his previous missed opportunity.
Yeah, actually, he didn't even have time to take a break. I think the game started like 5 minutes after the last round.
Yeah, that's intense.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned the Gelfand book. Greg Shahady also speaks highly of that book. Do you have any other... I have a couple questions based on that. One is, do you have any other books that have been as formative for you? And the other is, do you feel like that is something... the lessons you took from that continued impact your chess style, or was it something that was fresh in your mind and had just more of a short-term effect in the U.S. Championship?
Gelfand's Positional Thinking is really a book that every professional chess player should read, and I even went back and read second time after the U.S. Championship because I don't want it to be short-term. I want to learn from it and always use it in my career. He really teaches how to, not just how to play positionally, but how to think positionally, when to make positional decisions, and it's really fantastic. And there are many other great chess books, of course, that I always go back to. One of them that comes to mind is Dvoretsky's Endgame Manual. I love that book, and endgames, no matter how well you know them, you keep to, it just happens that you forget them. The theoretical endgame, so you have to go back and always refresh your memory. So that's one book that I always have with me at the tournaments. And I also, of course, learned a lot from Jacob Augert's books, all of his, I think, 4 or 5 different books. Those are the ones that immediately come to mind.
Yeah, those seem to be the ones that are mentioned most frequently. So, I mean, I think that's good that... People can't say they don't know what to study, myself included. So moving forward from the U.S. Championship, your next big event was the Olympiad. Is that correct?
Yes. So after your championship, I didn't play in a tournament until Olympiad for 4 months. Yes.
And how was your experience at the Olympiad?
Oh, it was amazing. Playing for the U.S. Women's team. We had such a good relationship with all the team members and captain and coach, Yasser Serwan and Robert Hess. It was a really wonderful experience, and we played very well. We missed a medal by 0.5 point. We're very close, and actually we're the only team in the tournament who played all the strong teams by rating. We had very tough pairings, and I just loved how when one of us would lose, the team players would just be there for us and encourage us and help us get over it. It's a really good team spirit, and I just loved it. I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, it's impressive because you guys, I mean, I don't know if I would categorize you as rivals, but you're certainly playing for a lot of money every U.S. championship, so it's good that you're able to band together.
Yeah, I think we are rivals at the U.S. championship, but... when we played as a team, yes, I have played for many different teams, whether it was for a league, for national tournaments, but I've never had such a good dynamic as I had with the U.S. women's team.
Thanks. Okay, so I think we're basically up to the modern age. We've gone through your whole chess career. So what are you up to? What are your plans going forward?
Well, right now, I just played GM Invitational Tournament in St. Louis. I'm just trying to get back in form, play some tournaments. I'll be playing North American Open in Las Vegas at the end of this month. And then I'll be preparing for the U.S. Championship, which is going to be probably in April again.
So do you spend months, like, preparing for that?
For the U.S. Championship, yes. I spend about 3 months preparing every day for it.
Wow. And in terms of your career, do you do any teaching or any other chess-related things, or are you just focused on playing right now?
Yes, I'm a part-time chess teacher. I teach online mostly, and sometimes I teach at the Las Vegas Chess Club. And I enjoy that very much. I think I'm a born teacher. I love teaching. It's very satisfying to me.
How did you end up in Las Vegas?
We moved again because of my husband's work. And we both loved Vegas. We got married here. So we're very happy about this move. And we can't imagine moving anywhere else right now. We really love it here.
And is he? Does he play chess at all?
He knows how to play chess, but no, he's not a professional.
Okay.
By any means.
And what is the? I didn't even know there was a chess club in Las Vegas. Although I guess it's not a big surprise. What is the chess scene like there?
It's a small club, but anytime I go there, there are always kids and some adults playing tournaments or blitz, and having lessons. It's really nice and pleasant. I hope that one day there's a bigger chess club here with a lot more people, but I think it's a good start.
Okay. And my wife and I are fans of Georgian food. I don't know if you lean, having lived in both Georgia and Russia, I don't know if you lean towards a certain cuisine, but have you found anything that reminds you of back home out in Vegas?
There are many Russian restaurants here and Eastern Europeans that have Georgian food on the menu, but I myself am not a big fan of Georgian food, so it's not a big deal for me. Although when I lived in Georgia, I did love it, and when I first moved to Russia, I missed it a lot. But now I studied nutrition, and I care more about my health than taste of the food.
Now you're making me feel guilty. I was going to say, now I guess you Hachapuri is not exactly a health food, although it is delicious.
Not really. Yeah, it is delicious.
Okay, well, I really appreciate your time. I don't know if you have anything else you would like to touch on, but I can't think of any more questions.
Yeah, I think we've covered my whole life. But I'm just happy that there's a podcast about chess, and I'll be happy to listen to other chess players and their stories.
Yeah, as I mentioned to you in an email, this is just something I've been waiting and waiting for someone to do, and I'm pretty busy. Mm-hmm. But these are questions that I like to hear answered, so hopefully we can keep it going for a while. If people want to reach you, what's the best way to do that?
They can go on my website, nazipaikiza.com. And I have a contact page where they can send me an email directly from the website or just from their personal email.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Nazi. Good luck in the next U.S. Championship and other endeavors.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.